Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. You know, designers are problem solvers. And maybe designers are the last remaining optimists. And with no shortage of economic and environmental problems worldwide, designers are coming up with all kinds of ways to reinvent and reimagine cities around the globe. In this week's issue of New York Magazine, architecture critic Justin Davidson and design editor Wendy Goodman have gone design hunting and have plucked out their favorite recent and imminent urban inventions. They found a glass-bottom bridge, an urban umbrella, sky bridges, flower towers, bendable bike racks, and four-foot-wide homes. I think we have a lot of those in Manhattan, actually. But they also found design that serves as a catalyst for entrepreneurship and social justice and might just lead to solutions to the global economic crisis. Justin Davidson and Wendy Goodman join us now to talk about what New York can learn from the best of global design. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you so much.
Wendy, explain what you and Justin's mission was in writing this collection of pieces in this week's issue. What were you actually hunting for?
I was actually hunting for the most innovative design worldwide in urban spaces, and I was looking specifically for residential challenges and how those challenges were met, and also the most inventive and exciting projects. So I was hunting for things that would really invigorate people's imagination.
So, listeners, how about from your travels and your experiences, what have you seen in terms of urban design, residential, as Wendy just said, or commercial, or public space, or public usage designs that you think New York could learn from? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And Justin, I guess it isn't totally new, right? New York has been stealing from other cities and countries over the years. We've been stealing from Copenhagen and Amsterdam with our bus rapid transit, pedestrian plazas, miles of bike lanes, and the coming bike share program. But you talked to former Manhattan city planner and kind of an evangelist for urban density, Vishan Chakrabarty, who thinks we really should be looking to places like Hong Kong and Tokyo. Why there?
Yeah, he's very impatient with the idea that we should be taking these little quality of life things from Copenhagen and Amsterdam. He feels like those are, by comparison, relatively provincial small towns and really don't tell us what we need to know. We're a large financial services based economy, a vast city, and that our counterparts are really similar kinds of high density cities, especially in Asia.
And so what, for example, is coming out of Tokyo or coming out of Hong Kong?
Well, the real issue is how you handle density. And there's an exhibit at the Skyscraper Museum right now about super tall buildings, which are a type that's become quite common in Asia. And we have one, which is the One World Trade Center. And the idea of building these complex towers that are commercial hubs and transit hubs and residential and hotels, and this is something we really don't do here.
And to take the Chakrabarty thought further, he thinks we need to get way more dense, especially in the boroughs and the close-in suburbs. So like Queens Boulevard should be lined with towers, he thinks, and so should parts of New Jersey near the city. But how do you do density of that, you know, that's that dense without it becoming a claustrophobic, Blade Runner-esque urban dystopia?
Well, one place we're going to find out is at Hudson Yards, which is going to be an incredibly dense development with
on the far west side of Manhattan.
On the far west side, with a public space at the center of it. In fact, several and public spaces that tie into the rest of the west side. That's the challenge, is to design spaces that people want to be in, design the street, design the way that the buildings hit the street, and still have all that density.
And before we go to some of our callers, Wendy, you went looking, as you said, for some experimental designs, mainly around housing. Did it comport with Chakrabarty's idea of extreme density?
Yes. Or did you,
yes?
Yes.
Such
well,
as?
Well, if you look at our first page, WorkAC has done this fantastic, it's called Nature Land in Oregon, and there's going to be a show at the Museum of Modern Art about how we're responding to the foreclosure crisis. And WorkAC is a fantastic firm that reimagined sort of suburban-urban. So, again, they've packed into a very wonderful space that incorporates nature almost at every turn, and yet there are apartment buildings and different typologies of the ways that people can live together.
Can you describe one example?
One is a circular building that's around, it sounds a little odd, but around a methane plant. So it's you know, that and that is heating. There are pools on top of this building. And so it's a very graceful building, but it also incorporates, it's a very useful building. So it's a residential building that's also performing, if you will. And the methane breaking down bio solids is heating the building and heating the water for the pools, for instance.
I won't ask where the methane comes from.
No, don't.
We're talking with Justin Davidson and Wendy Goodman from New York Magazine. They have gone design hunting and plucked out their favorite recent and imminent urban innovations from around the world, and what New York can learn from them is the key question. Ben in Bedford-Stuyvesant, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Good morning, Brian. I'm a great fan. I used to be Ben from Harlem, and I moved, so now I'm Ben from Bed-Stuy.
Congratulations. I hope you found something nicer.
Thanks. A garden apartment. So I have two suggestions to add to the list. One is in Mexico City. Their biggest boulevard, I forget the name, but it's equivalent to like Paris's Champs-Élysées. They had a big contest about a decade ago where they invited all of Mexico City sculptors to design creative benches. And over 100 winners were selected, commissioned and paid for by the city to build their benches. Some are quite austere, some are whimsical, children climb on them, and they're always filled because Mexico City is a populous place.
Thank you very much. And again, congratulations on your move. So, Justin, can design be a catalyst for entrepreneurship? And I think while we're south of the border, Medellin teaches us something about that.
Yeah, I mean, density, Hong Kong-style density is just one part of it's not even an equation, a triangle that I lay out in the story between density, livability, and social equity. So if density is Hong Kong and livability is some of the things that we've been adopting from Copenhagen and Amsterdam and other places, social equity is something that we can learn a lot from Latin America about, because there are certain cities, Medellin being one of them, and I think this example in Mexico City is another. Bus rapid transit from Bogota and Curitiba, Brazil, are other examples of places where design and policy and planning and local community organizers and the people themselves have all really teamed up together in really interesting ways to solve problems that are there in the city. So in Medellin, one of the things they've done, and another in Caracas also, and other Latin American cities, was to connect slums that are spread out along very steep slopes to the downtown area by gondola, by ski lift.
Huh. Fascinating. Ben in Carroll Gardens, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Oh, hey, how you doing? I lived in Japan for 5 years. I lived both in the city, like Yokohama, and then out in the rural kind of countryside, where there was much smaller urban centers just around the train center, the train station. And even when you go out to the country, the default kind of way of walking around the downtown area is to always look up and down rather than just left to right, because they build stores
like tourists on top of, in Manhattan.
Yeah, kind of. You know, stores on top of stores. And I found that really fascinating. It's just a different kind of default way of looking and living in the city. And it really does open up a lot of possibilities. I mean, Japan is probably the most or one of the most populous places on Earth. And yet you never really feel, I mean, it's crowded, but it's not ridiculous. It doesn't feel kind of uncomfortably crowded. So there's something to that, building up, yeah, up and down rather than just left to right.
Even the commercial sector. So you would find stores, you know, nobody wants to be on the second floor if it's a store, right? Because people are going to walk by, they're not going to see your sign. But I don't know. Is that more common in Tokyo? Are you familiar with it too?
In Hong Kong, there are escalators that go through the downtown commercial district, linking different levels, and people are used to traveling up and down through commercial areas. I mean, we do have multi-story malls, and they're designed to.
So to bring people vertically, much up and down in this story, the escalators, the gondolas. Wendy, thinking about the small living spaces in Tokyo, can you design your way out of a financial crisis? Because in recent years, I feel like sustainable design was the hot thing.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think the design industry as a whole can start shifting from a focus on that to a focus on affordable design?
I think it's absolutely critical that everybody starts to really concentrate on affordable housing. And in the issue, we have Michael Maltzen, who has done a lot of this in L.A., and also David Ajay, who's a fantastic architect. Both of them are. And David Ajay is doing his first public housing, you know, affordable housing building in Sugar Hill in Harlem. So I think that affordable housing is going to benefit from everybody deserves good design. Good design makes their life better. It's not a question of, you know, good design is only for people who can afford it. Everybody is entitled to good design.
Justin, in your opinion, I guess as an architecture critic, as you look around the world for innovative models of design that New York should learn from, how does Robert Moses' legacy hold up?
Well, It's complicated. I mean, he built roads and bridges that New York actually needed and was part of a road building movement that was important.
Infrastructure.
Yeah. He also, we take his name as a representative of the whole public housing building project, although that was only really, he was only a part of it and it was only a part of his legacy. And, you know, in New York, it's actually been relatively successful. I mean, it does house a lot of people, both in middle-income and low-income areas. What it did urbanistically was, in a lot of cases, destroy neighborhoods that now we would certainly do our best to preserve.
Of design solutions in New York, because I think, well, okay, if we're learning from people around the world, can other cities learn from New York? Is there anything we're doing exceptionally well? And you write, New York's brand of mild anarchy and high decibel opposition to every change suggests that we need to cast them in concrete. A bike or bus lane set off by a median signals that it's here to stay in a way that a stripe of paint can't. So is that go to bed?
Oh, I think it's crucial to institutionalize some of these things, to make them lasting, because it's easy to put in something temporary. And I think that it's been an important step. But to really make these things not just irreversible by, you know, shifts in political winds, but also just to make them absorbed into the culture of New York. All these things like, you know, taking the cafe tables in public plazas that have been springing up all over New York and turning those into permanently designed spaces so that they're really part of the city. It changes the flavor and the texture of the city.
We have a half a minute left, Wendy. What do you want people to come away from after reading this issue of New York Magazine with what New York can learn from urban design around the world on the cover?
I just hope it inspires them and it gives them some joy, and it also enlarges their ideas about what's possible.
Justin Davidson is the architecture critic. Wendy Goodman is the design editor of New York Magazine. Designers, problem solvers, maybe the last optimists, coming up with all kinds of ways to reinvent and reimagine cities, housing, public space around the globe. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Brian
Lehrer on WNYC. Thanks for listening. Talk to you tomorrow.